I want to talk this evening about agronomy as Jesus teaches it in the New Testament. It's very easy to get caught up reading these parables for me and explaining them and forgetting the meaning behind them. It's very easy for me to start reading and think that Jesus is just talking about seed when he's clearly talking about a much greater meaning behind these seeds that we talk about. Many of you know the parable of the sower, and you probably know it pretty well. We're going to go through that, and then we're going to talk about the parable of the tares. I don't plan on spending a very long time studying this evening, as these are pretty familiar parables. But what we're going to do is we'll read these parables, and then we'll read the explanation that Jesus gives for them. And I want to make two points before we close this evening, one being the devices that Satan uses that are talked about in these parables, as well as the good ground. In the parable of the sower, we read a lot, or a little, I should say, about the good ground. But there's not a whole lot of explanation given about the good ground. I'd like to look at the good ground this evening. So the parable of the sower, in Matthew chapter 13, where we'll get most of our verses from this evening, Jesus says, "And he spoke many things unto them in parables, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow, and when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. Some fell upon stony places where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. But other fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some an hundredfold, some sixtyfold, and some thirtyfold." Now suppose if you were thinking about this parable, you can think of it as a bird's eye view of the ground. This is what the bird might see from the air. You know, there's this seed and it's scattered out, and some of it lands over here, some of it's by the wayside, some of it's in the stony places, and some of it's in the thorns and the thistles, but the rest of it lands on the good ground. Jesus goes on to explain the parable a little bit later in the chapter. He says, "Hear ye therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which received seed by the wayside. But he that received the seed in the stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receiveth it. Yet hath he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. For when tribulation or persecution ariseth because of the word, by and by he is offended. He also that receives seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of the world of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. But he that receives seed in the good ground is he that heareth the word and understandeth it, which also beareth fruit and bringeth forth some." So he talks about, and he gives a definition. He gives all these seeds, I guess a different name, if you will. He says that some of the seeds, whenever they're planted, they fall by the wayside. He said those that fall by the wayside are ones that don't understand the word whenever they hear it, whenever they receive the word. And then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away. He says, but some of them receive the seed in the stony places. And whenever they hear the word, they with joy receive it. But they have no root in themselves because of tribulation, because of persecution. And then there's some that are sown in the thorns, and the care of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful. I think it's important that we grasp the concept that Jesus is talking about souls here. And like I said, it's easy for me to start thinking, and I just start thinking about seed. It's very easy when he's talking in parables, but he's talking about souls. He says some of the souls, whenever they hear the word, he's specifically talking about people who hear the word here. Some of them hear the word, and because they don't understand it, Satan sees an opportunity there. And that's whenever that seed, or that soul, if you will, is catched away from his heart, as it says there. And he talks about those that are in the stony places. A soul in the stony place is one that they receive the word with joy. And I assume they understand the word, because those in the wayside didn't even understand the word. But after a while, because of tribulation, because of persecution, because maybe they believe it's too hard to be a Christian or just too much work, it says that by and by they are offended. And Satan sees an opportunity there. And then there's souls that, if you will, are among the thorns. He calls the thorns the deceitfulness of riches. They choke the word, and then the souls become unfruitful. You know, I guess one way I kind of see this, and I don't know if this is true, but I guess it's open for interpretation, is that maybe these seeds are a little bit farther along in, as you go along in their walk with Christ. You know, some, they just hear the word and don't understand it, and that's it. You know, some of them, they hear the word, and we assume they understand it because it doesn't say. It says with joy, but it says then they dureth for a while. You know, they made it a little while longer. And then they had no root in themselves. And then you go a little bit further, and Satan uses more and more devices as you go through in battling against these souls. And finally, those that were choked up by the thorns of the world, which he calls the deceitfulness of riches. And a seed or a soul that was once fruitful becomes unfruitful. So we have these different parts here of this parable. He talks about the wayside, the stony places among thorns, but then there's one other seed there, the seed that fell upon the good ground, and that seed remained fruitful. You know, Christ gives us warning about this exact same parable a few chapters earlier. I found that very interesting. In Matthew chapter 7, Christ is talking there as well, and he kind of talks about something very similar to this parable. There, Christ says, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction. And many there be which go in thereat, because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." I don't know if it's possible or not that Christ might have been talking about exactly what he's talking about in this parable. You know, he says, "Few there be that find it," and we talk about these seeds, we talk about these souls, and only one quarter, if just by straight percentages, land on the good ground. And that's just by percentages of the ones he talks about. You know, he says most of them are going to be taken away because they're going to land in the wayside. And then the majority of the rest of them in the stony places, the majority of the rest of those are in the thorns. And then there's few there be that land on the good ground. Few there be. Because of the devices of Satan. And I think what this goes to show is just how fragile a soul can be. How fragile that seed is. If you want to know how fragile seed is, and specifically we'll talk about a wheat seed because that's what they talk about in the parable of the tares, just ask Beverd. He's been sowing wheat for quite a while now. Because a seed is very fragile. If you were to plant a seed in your own home in a pot, you know, I don't suppose you just throw the seed down there at it and hope that it made it in the pot. You know, it talks about the seed not having enough root. You know, if you're going to plant a wheat seed, you're going to make sure that it has enough root. You're going to make sure that it has enough water. You're going to make sure that the sun doesn't scorch it. Because a seed and a soul is very fragile. Matthew 26 says, "Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." The seed is weak. You know, it sounded to me like all those seeds and all those souls that Christ described in that parable were willing. They were willing to try. They all heard the word. They'd all come into contact with the word. And don't you think they probably wanted to grow? Don't you think they probably wanted to be a seed that landed on good ground and a seed that brought forth fruit? But the flesh is weak. I think it's important, once again, to note, and I meant to say this earlier, that as I said, these were all seed that heard the word. While I said this is a bird's eye view of a field, I guess, if you will, he's not talking about everybody in the world. He's just talking about those who hear the word. Possibly he's talking about those who really want to be a Christian. So I think that sums up the parable of the sower. As I said, it's a pretty common parable that we read oftentimes. The parable of the tares is a little less familiar to me as well. In Matthew chapter 13, later on there, Jesus speaks again, of course. saying, "The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed his good seed in his field, but while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and had said unto him, 'Sir, didst thou not sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares?' He said unto them, 'An enemy hath done this.' The servant said unto him, 'Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up?' But he said, 'Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" This is a little bit more of a harder to understand parable that Jesus talks about. And if the parable of the sower and the seed was the bird's eye view of above the field, I suppose that the parable of the tares is a more defined look at the field itself. And you might disagree with that, and that's fine. I'm not sure that I really believe that either, but it seems more like it's more of a defined look at the field. Jesus goes on and he explains the parable a few verses later. Jesus answered, says, he answered and said to them, "He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. The enemy that sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of this world. The Son of Man shall send forth his angels, and they shall gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and them which do iniquity." So Christ tells that this he says this is the world. Don't know if that was on the last page. Yeah, he says it right there. The field is the world. And he's saying that this is the kingdom. You know, Christ's kingdom today is in the world. That's where Christ's kingdom lives and functions today. He says that we're in the world, but at night the children, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. Satan comes along and he sows his own wheat behind. Now, if you don't know what a tare is like an imitation of wheat. It looks like wheat. To the naked eye, you couldn't really tell that it wasn't wheat. And what he's saying is that there's going to be people, there's going to be false prophets who look like Christians, who act like Christians, who talk like Christians, and would do just about anything else like a Christian. But once you really get to looking at that person, they're no Christian. It's someone who would imitate a Christian. It's someone, as we'll read here in a moment, as a wolf in sheep's clothing. I suppose there's many ways to define a tare, but here we have Christ explaining this good seed and the tares. And if you noticed a minute ago, Christ warns us of this parable as well in Matthew chapter 7. We just read the verses before it. Christ says in Matthew 7, "Beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves." You know, he goes into great detail, and I'm not going to read it this evening, to define a tare. I think it'd be beneficial to go read it in Matthew chapter 7. He talks about false prophets. He talks about how you can notice or how you can determine a false prophet. But for this evening, to define a tare, I think there's many different ways. Christ leaves it up for a broader definition, I guess, to define a tare. Just to be someone who looks like a Christian, someone who acts like a Christian. You know, I'll submit to you this evening that you could be a tare. You know, it's very possible. The tares are those that are sown in and they're amongst the children of God. They're amongst those that are in the kingdom. They're probably going to act like those that are in the kingdom. You know, a tare might be someone, as we'll define later, as a lukewarm Christian. A tare could be someone who shows up to church once a week, and they act like a Christian, they act like everything's going great, they act like they're living a great life, and then the rest of the week, they don't want nothing to do with Christ. They don't want nothing to do with the actions of a Christian. Except for on Sunday. You know, they walk and they talk just like a Christian. Just as a tare looks like a wheat plant. a darnel is what they call it on Wikipedia, classified as a weed or a poisoned weed. I'd read that on the internet. You know everything on Wikipedia is true, so I guess in other places they have, you know, these they'll call them a darnel. It's about like a tear, and it can get in there amongst the wheat, and a farmer might never notice it. Their cattle go to eating it, and their cattle get poisoned because of this. There's some other ways that we can define a tare. In Matthew 15, it says, "This people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men." You know, there's some mega preachers out there that you might think of when you think of a tare. Those that do not endure sound doctrine, as we read in 2 Timothy. "For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables." You know, Christ doesn't talk about the soil in this parable. But I have to assume that this is not the worst of soil. There's people in the kingdom that are sown in right there. I think these are people that were deceived by Satan. People that Satan deceived. He used his tricks and he used his devices to trick these people into believing things that weren't true, into teaching things that weren't true. And it's just something that we don't think about very often. It's something that we don't think about very often, that we ourselves might be a tare if we don't endure sound doctrine. If we're a Christian who likes to come on Sunday and not act like a Christian the rest of the week. If we're a Christian, as in Matthew chapter 15, it says that draweth nigh to me with their lips, or that draweth nigh to me with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from God. I think that'd be a great way to define a tare. These have been problems ever since New Testament times. Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians. In 2 Corinthians 11:26, as Paul is talking about all the perils, he says, "in perils," at the very end there, "among false brethren." This is something that was important to Paul. I think it's something that we need to watch out for today, because it's a tactic that Satan can use to deceive us. He says earlier in the chapter, "For such are false prophets, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." And earlier what he's talking about is, for if he that cometh preacheth another Jesus, teaching things that aren't true. If you hear someone teaching from God's word that's just simply not true, that could be defined as a tare or a darnel, if you want to be fancy. But it's all part of Satan's plan. You know, I don't know if I find it interesting, but Satan, he uses all these tactics, and he tries at each step in the life of a Christian to get at that Christian. You know, some of those, he can make sure that they land in the wayside. Those that don't understand the word, he makes sure that they land in the wayside. And a little bit, as I went on earlier and talked about in the steps of a Christian, kind of, he a little farther, he gets those in the stony places. Those Christians that make a little further, he deceives them in the thorns. And now we get to these Christians that are established Christians, that are planted by the Son of God, those that maybe landed on the good ground, and there's Satan again. And he's pulling out all his tricks. He's trying everything he's got up his sleeve. And now he's trying to deceive into believing that, that things within the scripture aren't true, or if someone preaches another Jesus or preaches something that's not true. So in our last two points, I think it's important to notice that Satan goes after all the seed. He doesn't care. He don't care where you land. He don't care when he gets at you. He just wants to get at you. We read in 1 Peter chapter 3 that our adversary, the devil, walketh about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. You know, when I think about Satan walking around, I don't see Satan as the guy who just sits over there in the wayside, waiting on someone to stumble over there to him. I don't see him waiting in the stony places, waiting on a Christian just to happen to come to the stony places. He's walking about. He's seeking those who are weak. He's seeking those that may have landed on the good ground, who are in there amongst the tares. In Ephesians chapter 6, we're taught that we need to put on the armor of God to stand against the wiles of the devil, meaning the tricks, the many temptations, the many tricks, the many ways that Satan can try to tempt and help trip up a Christian. And I think that's because Satan recognizes something that we don't even recognize oftentimes. We don't recognize the fact that all of this seed was in a place where it could grow. You know, the parable made no mention of the fact that, or not the fact that the seed wasn't able to grow. It just says that things come along. You know, they dureth for a while. That seed was doing fine for a while. And then came the wicked one. And then came the sun. And then came the thorns. In verse number 19, we read, and I was going to read a little more, but I don't have it on there. I'll flip over there real quick. We read about all these, and I fully believe now that these seeds could have grown right where they were. Starting in verse number 19, he says, "When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one." This is one that heard the word, and then came Satan. Satan recognized that while that seed might have been in the wayside, it could still grow. While it might have been in the wayside, it wasn't in a place that Christ couldn't reach it. The wayside's not far enough away from Christ until the wicked one came. In verse number 21, we read about those that it says, "Yet he hath no root in himself." The verse before it says that that is the one in the stony place. You know, he received the word with joy. He wasn't in a place that Christ couldn't reach him until he had no root in himself. In the next verse, "He also that received the seed among the thorns, he heard the word." And we have to assume he was fruitful because it says then he became unfruitful. Because of the cares and the riches, because of the deceitfulness of Satan, he became unfruitful. Someone who was once fruitful before. And then in the parable of the tares, we read a very similar instance. Verse 25, "But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also." All these seed were in a place where they could grow. And Satan recognized that. They might have been a place where they were vulnerable. And Satan recognized that. And that's whenever he attacked. So in closing this afternoon, as we talk about that, I want to talk about, you know, what is the good ground? How can we be and make sure that we're on that good ground? This is part of the parable that is not as explained as much as those that aren't on the good ground, especially in Matthew. But if we read over in Luke, I think it explains it a little bit better. Luke chapter 8, Jesus says, But that on the good ground are they which in an honest and good heart." As I said, I often read this and I start thinking in terms of plants and in terms of wheat when Christ is talking about souls here. He's not talking about plants. He's talking about souls. The good ground is nothing to do with soil. It has to do with the heart. And he says in Luke that the fertile soil, that the good ground is an honest and good heart, among a couple other things, but I believe that's the most important one. An honest and good heart is what the good ground is all about. To define the good heart, I think we can read just a couple of verses. John 14 says, "If ye love me, keep my commandments." James 1 says, "But be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves." Ephesians 6 says, "Put on the armor of God that ye may be able to stand against." Those with an honest and good heart are those that not only heard the word like the other seed, but they kept it and they brought forth fruit with patience. It has to do with your heart. It has to do with having an honest and a good heart. The heart there is I looked up that word good and honest. And it simply means good. It simply means one that wants to do good, that's sincere in serving the Lord. And that's who is able to bring forth fruit for the Lord. So I ask you this evening, are you a tare? You know, we didn't spend a ton of time on tares, I guess, but in Revelation 3, I think we see for us today possibly the best way to define a tare. In Revelation 3, I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. The danger of being the lukewarm Christian, the danger of being a tare today is great. What did Christ say about the tares in the parable itself? He's talking about whenever the Lord comes back, whenever he comes to take the faithful to heaven, the tares will be gathered up first. And he said they'll be bundled up and cast into the furnace. That's what happens to the tares. He says that the wheat, or that the faithful Christians, will be gathered up and taken to the master's barn. But there's something waiting for those tares. There's something waiting for the lukewarm Christian. There's something waiting for the false prophet. For those who are neither cold nor hot for the Lord. They will be bundled up with the rest of the tares and cast into the furnace. I leave you with James chapter 4. It says, submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. All of that seed was in a place where God could reach it. Most of the seed that we read in the parable of the sower was in a place where it grew for a while, until Satan came, until deceit came, until the troubles and tribulations of their own heart, till they deceived themselves. The Lord was there. The Lord was going to help them grow. Whether they were in tribulation, whether they were in temptation, the Lord was going to help them. But they gave in to Satan instead of drawing nigh to God. And I think that even those on the good ground had to deal with problems. Don't you think the sun was beating down on the good ground just like it was in the stony places? Don't you think that there were some weeds? Don't you think that there were some stones in the good ground just as there was, and that was described as the thorny places? I believe that those on the good ground, those with an honest and good heart that are faithful to the Lord, will resist the devil. And that's the reason why they're described as the good ground.